What up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast, the first of two back-to-back shows. John and I will be back tomorrow doing our normal AEW, NXT reviews, and whatever else is going on in pro wrestling. I actually watched Monday Night Raw, so I'll have some thoughts on that show for John. Kind of wanted to get, you know, and just watch that show and SmackDown as well, just to kind of get in the groove for the Royal Rumble. But wow, what a show that was. But we're not talking wrestling on this show. This is strictly UFC 257 mega preview. What you are going to hear is I did three interviews / segments. We'll open up with Big Dave Meltzer. I actually talked to him on Sunday. So, you know, not that anything really has changed, but he's looking at this stuff from the perspective of about 6 days out before the fight. And then in our second segment, you will hear from Ryan Frederick and Paul Fontaine, who together host the show, the MMA show on the Fight Game Media Patreon network called In the Clinch. So if you're a subscriber, you've heard them talk. It's a really hardcore MMA. There's betting involved. Like, these guys really know their stuff when it comes to the UFC. And Ryan also writes for us, writes MMA for us. Paul writes a betting column for us. So they're really in the Fight Game Media ecosystem here, and I really enjoy them being a part of this team. So you'll hear them in the second segment, and that I think we recorded that on Tuesday evening. And then on the last segment that you'll hear is AEW superstar Jon Moxley giving his thoughts on UFC 257, Conor versus Dustin, Max Holloway, future fights. And if you've heard John on our show before, you know that he and I and Justin Nipper have actually talked about Dustin and Conor now for a little while. So the fight is coming. John's really excited, and you'll hear that in our third segment here. So just one other note before I turn it over to my interview with Dave to start it off is that we are going to come back on Saturday night after the big show, UFC 257. John and myself and Justin Nipper, we're going to come back. That is going to be for the Patreon. So if you enjoy this kind of show and you want to hear even more from us when it comes to this, Jon Moxley is going to be on our post-game show. So definitely subscribe. And, you know, I've said this before and I'll say it again here. If you're kind of wondering about it, you don't know if you want to hit that subscribe button, gg@fightgamemedia.com. That is my email address. I will work with you to give you a free month so that you could test drive the network. I haven't counted, but I believe I'll have this somewhere because I'm going to write something about it. But, you know, I don't know, since the beginning, which was, I think we started in December, we're almost at the end of January. So we're almost 2 weeks into the Fight Game Media Network. I want to say we've had about 35 shows that we've posted. If you had the top tier, which is, you know, the top two tiers, $15 and $25 tiers, around that number of shows. If you were just on the $10 tier or even on the $5 tier, obviously it's a little bit less, but you're even on the $5 tier, you're still getting 2 to 3 shows a week. So check it out. If you kind of are a little uneasy and want to test drive it, gg@fightgamemedia.com. I will work with you. I will give you a free month so that you can check it out and see if you enjoy it. You know, we are at the beginning of this thing though. So you know, we're learning with you and we're trying to figure out, you know, other things that people want on this network, but we're at the very beginning. So this is only going to get better. Anyways, I've talked enough. Let's kick it off with my first interview that I did in this UFC 257 mega preview with Big Dave Meltzer. All right, Dave, it's the Sunday before the big UFC show, Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier. How do you feel it compares to the last time Conor McGregor fought, when he fought Cowboy? Do you feel this feels a little bit bigger to me, and I was wondering if you felt the same.
Yeah, because I think that with Cerrone, everybody kind of knew Cerrone was at the end of his career, you know, of being a top guy. And with Poirier, it's not the end of his career. And I think that he's got a, I think it's going to be more of a test of McGregor. Because, I mean, the Cerrone fight was so fast, and McGregor looks so good. But it's like he looks so good, but then what does that mean? Because with McGregor, I mean, the question of McGregor is to me rounds 3, 4, and 5, you know, because in the fights that he's had trouble with, it's when he gets to a certain point, he gets tired, and we didn't learn anything from the Cerrone fight. And, you know, he's been through, you know, God knows what, and he's older and whatever he's been doing. So, I mean, we know he's explosive. We know he's skilled. But if you can't take the guy out right away, and Poirier's a real tough guy, what happens in rounds 3, 4, and 5? I mean, so that's like the big question that I'm looking at this fight. If it gets there, you know, I mean, I do think that McGregor is a much better striker than Poirier. But I think that Poirier's mentally tougher than McGregor, but the only way that plays into the fight is him being able to survive McGregor's better skill.
Dana White was on the Stephen A. Smith ESPN Plus show, and he said he thinks Conor fights 2 to 3 times this year. We've heard the story before. Yeah. He made it. I think he said something to the effect of, like, the person he's talking to right now, meaning, I guess, the headspace that McGregor is in. What do you... I would be really surprised to see McGregor fight more than this time this year, especially if he wants to do this boxing match.
Well, that's the thing. If he's going to do the boxing match, that would probably be it for the year. But I could see him fighting one more time, especially if it's a championship fight, because somehow, I mean, Khabib's not going to be champion much longer. That really was weird yesterday when he did that interview, when Dana did the interview, where it was, I thought it was going to be like yes or no. And then we didn't get an answer. And it's almost like, what did like Khabib really say, as opposed to what Dana says he said? Because I don't believe he said what Dana said he said. So it's like, but what did he actually say? Because to me, it's like, if he really said that and he goes, I'll come back for one fight, I would think he would just go, it's going to be GSP, and Dana would make that fight. And, you know, and George was asked a couple days ago, and, you know, George didn't say no, but he didn't say yes. You know, if they came to him, and Dana and George, it's really weird, because I think George likes a lot of money and has no need to fight. And so Dana likes to just go with the idea that, like, he wants so much money, he doesn't really want to fight. And I'm sure that, like, George doesn't really want to fight anyway, but I think with Khabib, because he likes Khabib and likes the challenge, because it's a different level, you know, that actually means something, you know, in its own way. But I don't know. It's just a interesting thing. But like I said, like, I think Conor, if Conor loses, you know, he'll probably box Pacquiao and he probably won't come back, maybe for a long, long time, if ever, if he loses. If he wins, I expect if he's going to fight Pacquiao, they'll make so much money that I don't know, but I think that he may want to come back for a championship match. I mean, I'm 100% if he was going to fight Khabib, but I don't know that Khabib is really strong on fighting Conor. I think that's what the fight Dana wants, and I think that's the fight Conor wants both. And Conor's like, it was his best day, and it was me on my worst day. And it's like, Conor's going to have his angle that he's going to tell everyone, and people will believe. Some people will believe and some won't. But, and he's going to have his angle with Pacquiao. Like, let's face it, every one of us knows he's not winning that fight.
No.
But he's going to talk. He's going to have some angle where he's going to go in there and have this thread to convince people that he has a shot.
If you were giving Conor advice and he wins this fight, at the pay-per-view. What should be his if he really, now I'm sure he wants the Khabib fight, but that's the hardest fight for him at the same time.
Yeah.
If he really does want it, what would your strategy be? Because obviously Khabib has gone through a lot. He retired. He lost his father, his mentor. And from an emotional standpoint, my worry is that if Conor goes 110% Conor, it's not really going to work because of just, you know, what Khabib has been through. And he's not going to really buy into that stuff. It may just make him, you know, disrespect Conor even more for who he is. Like, how would you tell Conor to kind of try and promote this in order to get Khabib back in the cage?
Oh, to get him to agree?
Yeah.
That's hard because I know what it's going to be, which is the what I just said, that like you got me on your best day and on my worst day, and you know I was injured and you could never do it again. But yeah, I mean, for Khabib, he's going to look at that and just go, you're full of it, and I don't want to fight you because what do I, you know. And here's the reality is, it's like, what does he have to gain? Other than money, you know, he's got a ton of money to gain, but he's not really motivated by that. I mean, if he wanted to make money, he would, if Khabib wanted to make money, he would box in Saudi Arabia and get $75 million to box like somebody who would kill him in a boxing match, but he'd make money. But, you know, he's not interested in things like that.
I would almost think that if Conor goes in there and he goes, look, Khabib's the best guy that I've ever faced. He beat me. I'm going to lock myself into the gym and I'm going to train my ass off because I want to make sure, you know, I want to prove myself against him in this fight. Let's do it. I wonder if he takes that route instead of the route that you're saying.
But
Khabib actually expects or respects that, you know, and it could be in a sort of like this, you know, this psychological trick too. It doesn't even have, I mean, he would have to make it look, you know, like he is being sincere, but I wonder if Khabib would actually respect that and want to take that fight.
If he didn't throw that dolly through the window.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what I mean? It's like maybe, but you know, you know, it's like I don't see Khabib ever thinking Conor's not full of shit. You know,
yeah.
He'll like, if he does, I think anything Conor says, Khabib is gonna just go, you know, you're full of shit. And if he was really interested in making money, he would go, okay, you know, let him build this fight up and let's make the money. But he's not that guy. You know, I mean, if it was Daniel Cormier, you know, he might be pissed, but that's what he would, at the end of the day, he would go, let's make the money. That's what the fight game is all about.
Okay, so if Conor doesn't have Khabib as the big fight that everyone circles on their calendar for 2021, what are other options for him outside of this Pacquiao thing? What are the options in the UFC for fights for him that you think can actually do really, really strong business? He's going to do strong business no matter what, but is there another guy
he can
have that big fight with?
I mean, you know, Nick or Nate Diaz, I think he could have a real big fight with. You know, he really could with Masvidal. I don't know. I mean, if there's, he could have a, man, I don't know. Say beats Poirier. Ferguson's done. I don't think that just didn't happen. And I think that he'd destroy Ferguson right now anyway. I mean, Oliveira would be a great fight. I would love to see that, but I don't see that as the fight that, you know, Conor is in it for money. And I don't see that as, you know, it's too high risk, low reward. And then the problem with, when I say like with Nick and Nate Diaz, is that, you know, you just don't know where their heads are at, you know, because, you know, Nick Diaz hasn't fought in God knows how many years, but it would work. People will buy the fight. And Nate, people will buy the fight as well. But Masvidal, I think, beats him, you know, and I think handily. So I don't know that's the fight that...
Usman, too.
Well, Usman, I wouldn't even have mentioned because, number one, I think Usman beats him easily.
Yeah.
And the other one is I think he knows that, but I don't think Usman's as big business anyway. I mean, it would be business for sure because it's Conor and he'd be going for the championship. Covington is an interesting one, but I think Covington beats him, too. But... I do think him and Covington would probably do big business, but Masvidal would do the biggest business of all of them. And I think Masvidal would jump at the fight. I don't think that Masvidal, you know, but I don't think that, I think Conor is, that those are not good fights for Conor. And I don't think that Conor wants to come back for you know, I could see Conor thinking, you know, the Diaz brothers have been out for so long and they're overrated anyway, in a lot of ways. And so he, you know, he'll make money and it's winnable fights because they're going to be rusty. But with Masvidal, it's kind of like you go in there. It's like, I can make a lot of money with that fight. But I don't know that I'm going to be able to win that fight. But you know, who, you know, I mean, like if Ferguson hadn't looked so bad, Ferguson would have been a good one, but.
Is there no long play with Conor in GSP? And the reason why I ask is because I don't know if you've looked at the rankings, but, you know, Conor is number 4 in the lightweight. And all of a sudden they put him at number 15 at welterweight, having not had a welterweight fight in forever, as far as I can remember. And they just added him to 15, like for whatever reason he hasn't had a fight.
I have no idea, you know. So now the thing with I mean, Conor and GSP would, to me, be the biggest fight, except for the Khabib fight, in UFC history, as far as numbers go. And I don't know, I never understood why Dana didn't make that fight 3 years ago, you know, when GSP would have been more likely to take it. I don't know, you know, I don't know, you know, it's like the problem with the GSP fight from a Dana standpoint is that, what if GSP wins? Then what did you do? You know, because GSP is really not going to fight again afterwards.
Aren't you in a similar spot with Conor to a degree? I mean, not, you know, I think Conor, at least for the current year, you know, maybe he will do something else, but like it's almost a similar thing, right? Because Conor, you know, there's nothing that says Conor's going to come back and go through the ranks and do all of those things.
Yeah, I don't expect Conor to. I mean, I don't even know why Conor, honestly, other than, but here's the thing with Conor. The one thing is that he's motivated by attention. And I think that he needs to fight once a year to keep that cultural relevancy to where people hang on his every word. If he's like gone or retired, you know, then he's just some guy who's going to be fighting like, you know, criminal charges on a regular basis. Really? You know, I mean, unless he grows up, I mean, maybe he won't. Maybe
hard to stay out of trouble.
But he's, you know, the only way he can stay out of trouble is by being in camp because he's such a crazy man. So, but again, like, what's he going to do on Twitter? Because he lives for that shit. You know what I mean? So it's like he's going to need, when everything he says, everyone, you know, starts writing stories and he gets all that attention. I mean, he's not going to get that just by peddling whiskey, you know, after a while. So that's why I think that him walking away isn't going to be, even if he doesn't need the money, I think he needs the glory and the attention. And even if he walks away for like 9 months, he's going to want that back. And so I don't know that he's going to walk away until, you know, when he's 37 or something, I think he will, you know, because he'll be smart enough to know. But until he gets there, until he gets to the point where he realizes he needs to get out. And even then, what fighter really gets out at that point too? They usually all stay around too long. I mean, GSP is the exception, but GSP doesn't care if he has no attention. You know what I mean? GSP's happy going to the gym and you know, not fighting, whereas, you know, he doesn't need to be the center of attention, whereas Conor needs to be the center of attention.
So if this fight between Conor and Pacquiao happens, how is the UFC and Dana White involved, or are they not involved?
I think probably the same way as the Mayweather fight, because I'm sure they got him under contract, so they'll probably be co-promoters.
It's just because, you know, UFC is tied to ESPN Plus.
Right.
Pacquiao is not with Bob Arum, which would make it pretty easy to do. Pacquiao is with, I think Pacquiao is with Fox right now, if I'm correct on that.
With the money that they've got, they'll figure out a way. And it might be a dual, you know, like ESPN Plus and you know, Fox pay-per-view or something. You know, there's always ways to work that something out that big.
Yeah, I just, you know, it seems like it's an easy thing. And in the UFC, you know, making these fights should be an easy thing because they're under the same promotion. But when you mix the promoters like that, I do wonder how that's going to work. So, all right. Any quick last thing? What are you looking forward most to on that undercard?
Oh man. I guess
Michael Chandler,
I guess Chandler and Hooker, just cause you know, just the curiosity. And I think it's going to be Chandler fights are usually really good fights no matter what happens. I wish Chandler had come 5 years earlier. I when I saw him at the end, you know, Pitbull knocked him out, who's a smaller guy. He just looks older. And I don't see, like, he's got a good name coming in. He's new and he's fresh. And if he beats Hooker, you know, he'll be right in there in that championship mix right away because he is new and fresh. But I don't know. Like I said, there was a time when I really wished Michael Chandler was in UFC, and I think he would have done he would have been really good in it. But, you know, because Alvarez ended up winning the title, and they were pretty much even, I guess. But I think that he's not as good as he once was, and the top UFC guys. I don't know that he beats Hooker, but when it comes to like a Dustin Poirier, I'm pretty sure like a Dustin Poirier or Charles Oliveira would beat Chandler.
Yeah, Manny Pacquiao is fighting under Al Haymon for Premier Boxing Champions. Though I don't know what, you know, what his contract is like. So that, I mean, Al Haymon and Dana White working together, you know, I guess they did do it before with Mayweather. I'm sure Haymon was a part of that mix. So yeah, maybe they can get it done. All right, no, that is it. Looking forward to this pay-per-view, and we'll have some thoughts from other folks after this. All right, second special guest for our UFC Mega Preview is the co-host of the Fight Game Media Network exclusive MMA show, In the Clinch, Ryan Frederick, Paul Fontaine. What is up, fellas?
Not much. I'm just excited for Saturday.
Yeah, same here, getting geared up. Same here, getting geared up for fights here literally in about 7 hours, you know, our Wednesday card. So I mean, I got a full slate ahead of me this week.
So this fight is going to be really big. But I guess my first question to you both, and I'll ask Paul first, is when it comes to pay-per-view cards of UFC past, Connor had a big one in January of last year. This one feels a little bit bigger than that one, but just Connor fights in general, there's not the same conflict like that he had with Aldo or that he had with Nate Diaz. But the fact that it's a Connor fight just still makes it big. Like, how do you feel as far as how big this show is to the sort of the entire sport?
Well, I think it's kind of like, you know, and I'm a very casual boxing fan, but for me, it feels kind of like when, you know, you have one of the big boxing guys fighting, but they're not necessarily fighting somebody who casual fans would know. So when I hear like guys like Robert Silva and Carlos Torres talk about them, it's probably like casual MMA fans talk about me and Ryan talk about Dustin Poirier. So, you know, so if I'm tuning in, for Golovkin, or I'm tuning in for Canelo, or, you know, one of the other big names, Danny Garcia, I'm tuning in because I've heard of those guys and I'm interested in what's going to happen, but I have no idea who the opponent is. So I feel like that's probably what this is like for non-hardcore fans.
Ryan, in your circles, I imagine this is big, but outside of like your super hardcores, are your fringe MMA fans excited about this? I mean, it is a little bit of an increased price. I don't know how much, I don't know if people, I would imagine for ESPN Plus, this is a way for them to get the yearly subs as well as the pay-per-view. But are your fringe fans kind of talking about this one? You know, people who you don't normally talk MMA with?
I mean, it's the normal when it comes to Conor fight, everybody kind of gets jazzed up when he fights. So I mean, and Poirier is a much bigger name to a lot of people because they see him in main events on shows all the time. So I mean, even if they don't know the history between the two, the fact that the two have fought again, they get kind of jazzed up, you know, for the fact that it's a McGregor fight. So that's always going to get attention. But I mean, it kind of feels like a normal McGregor fight, not on a Habib level, but I mean, about as big as it's going to get, you know, outside of him fighting, you know, doing another boxing fight against like a Pacquiao or somebody.
So I'll stay with you, Ryan, for this question, but I think everybody is predicting, okay, when Conor wins, this is what's going to happen next. When Conor wins, you know, this is the fight that we're sort of lining up. I mean, Conor's the favorite, but could you see a situation where Dustin throws a monkey wrench into this whole idea of what's next after this fight?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people are discrediting Dustin Poirier. This is not the cakewalk fight that the Cerrone fight was a year ago. I still think Conor is the favorite for all the right reasons, but it's not like Poirier is any kind of slouch or anything. He's still a legit top five fighter. So, I mean, everybody's assuming Conor's going to win, but I don't think that's, you know, and I have my own belief on how it's going to go, which we'll get into. But I mean, anybody who thinks Conor's going to win, maybe even for a surprise. But I think a lot of fans, when they tune into the Conor fight, they're expecting him to win. So we'll see what happens on Saturday there.
So, Paul, you know, you're somebody who you guys do a betting column for the website, and you guys do a betting segment for your podcast. I don't even know what the odds are, but like if you had to bet on this fight, I'm guessing you're betting Conor sort of no matter what. But like, is there a situation where, you know, you start looking at the odds and maybe come Saturday they get a little wider than they are today? Would you consider betting Dustin?
Well, I mean, my gut says I don't want to bet against Conor. And we even talked about it, and I said I was pretty sure he was going to be one of my five picks for the column that we do on the website. But, you know, I was in my head thinking that the odds were probably going to be around minus 200, hopefully even a little bit better for Conor. And I'm looking right now, and the site we use is Bovada, and he's minus 300. So that's, yeah, you know, that's a 3-1 favorite. And that seems high. I don't, you know, but again, you don't want to bet on somebody that you think is going to lose.
Right.
So I just think that for me, I may just stay away from betting for this fight just because, you know, I don't like the payoff. But I told Ryan, like, I believe that if the Conor McGregor that fought Donald Cerrone, if he's in the same mindset, and all indications that he is, I don't think anybody at 155 can beat him aside from Khabib Nurmagomedov.
So, this is so interesting because, like, I don't know if you guys bet other sports, but for instance, the Dallas Cowboys, no matter how bad they do, because they are such a fan favorite team, they're always probably, you know, a half a point higher than they should be. And I feel like that's the same way with Conor. I don't think this is the fight that he's going to lose, though. I sort of feel like there are other fights that he may actually be given the benefit of the doubt in, that you have a better shot at winning. But, you know, Dustin Poirier is tough as all hell. I just don't see this being the one where he sort of falters and then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, tons of people lose money because they're just so high on him. But actually, I'm very interested in what you guys think is going to happen. Ryan, like, you know, when you picture this fight in your head, how do you see this one going?
So I was, as I mentioned on our show, I was at their very first fight in September of 2014 in Las Vegas. It was, you know, Connor's first fight in Vegas. And, you know, we did a thing on our show where we rewatched that fight here within the last few days. And it was just kind of one of the very first things that you notice is how you're going to notice between that fight and on Saturday night is how much smaller both those men were during that fight. So, you know, and but as far as the fight goes, I'm not so sure that it's going to be much different than that. I see a lot of people saying that Poirier is the better fighter. I think a lot of people are saying that just because Poirier's been more active over the years, but he's been in a ton of wars, and you know, yeah. And his mileage is so much further than McGregor's. Of course, Connor has, you know, who knows what all the outside, you know, things going on that he does in his personal life takes a toll on him. But as far as like fighting, you know, he's fresh, you know, not fighting, you know, only fighting once in the last, you know, since 2018. So, I mean, you know, both of them are in different spots since that fight. Poirier's since moved to America Top Team, you know, he's got better training partners than he did the first time. McGregor spent his entire camp in Portugal, kind of secluded away from everybody with his same crew that he has, but he brought back a lot of people from the past. So, I mean, I think as far as like who is probably going to be better off based on training, I think McGregor has the edge there. And he's always been about speed and footwork, and Dustin kind of starts slow. So I think Poirier is going to be looking to try to drag it out. But when you try to drag out a fight with Connor, it's, you know, very tough to do so because he's going to come right at you right away. So I really feel like we're going to see a finish within the first 5 minutes, and that McGregor is going to be on the winning end of it.
So just to back up what you were saying, last three fights, he goes five rounds with Max, wins. I mean, I thought he, you know, he was in decent control in that fight. But then he's got the fight against Khabib, which is pretty brutal for him. And then even the fight that he wins last summer against Dan Hooker, like both of these guys are taking big shots. So to your point, you know, Connor hasn't really fought a ton. The problem is I just don't know what the hell he's been doing, you know, during that time, whether, you know, he's been doing positive things or negative things. I imagine a fair bit of both. But Paul, mm-hmm. how is your feeling? What are you seeing come fight night?
Well, I think that a lot of Connor's opponents tend to, I don't want to say underrate him, but I think they tend to think that he's all, you know, just mouth and showmanship, and they forget that he's, you know, a very skilled striker. And what I see happening is Poirier getting overconfident and maybe even hurting him early, but, you know, like hitting him with a good shot and then moving in, and then Connor just catching him with a counter. And that's, you know, and then when Connor hits him, like, he's so precise. And when Ryan and I, when we rewatched the fight, Ryan mentioned, I had thought that the first fight was an early stoppage. And so I went back and watched it again, and it wasn't. Like, what it was he got hit hard, and it was just, it came from out of nowhere, and you didn't even see it coming. So you're just kind of jarred. And I didn't remember the fight, and Ryan's watched it many, many times, so he was very familiar with it. And for me, it was almost like I was watching it for the first time. So, I think that's something similar that's going to happen again. Like, you know, I do expect Connor, like, he's not going to come out of this unscathed, but I do think it's going to be like a counter shot, like what happened with Aldo, what happened the first time with Poirier. And, you know, it's just because he's such a skilled striker, and the training, like, you know, he's secluded in Portugal. Like, he's got all the money in the world. He's dedicated to fighting right now. That seems to be, like you said, I don't know what he's been doing. I think he's been training, and he wants to get that title back. He wants to be the best in the world. He wants to fight Khabib again. I don't think it's going to happen, but he's very dedicated to fighting. And, that's a scary guy for Dustin Poirier.
what I remember from the first fight is just the immense shit talking that McGregor was doing to get under Poirier's skin. And Poirier was trying to play the thing of like, you know, he's to, but it seemed to clearly affect him. I don't know if it affected him in the cage, but this time around, Connor is at such a different level. He doesn't need to kind of get under Poirier's skin like maybe he felt that he needed to do the first time, because he is the favorite. He is the draw. He's the A side. And I wonder mentally how this goes in for Poirier a little differently, because obviously Connor's the big star, right? Like Connor, the difference between then and now is just Connor became a gigantic star, and Dustin is a bigger star too, but he's still sort of the same workman-like fighter, and I just wonder the difference in the mind games there. But the other thing I was going to ask Paul, because you kind of mentioned it, are we sure Connor wants to fight Khabib again?
Well, yeah, like I think he wants to avenge his loss. So, you know, if for that reason only. And then the only way that he can actually prove that he's the best in the world at 155 is to beat the best in the world at 155. So for that, like, you know, and then there's like just a tremendous animosity there between the two of them. And for all the reasons that he wants to get that win back, Khabib has absolutely no interest in fighting him because he's already beat him, and he doesn't want to give him the satisfaction of even having a chance of avenging that loss or getting a big payday as a result of whatever happens in the fight. So, yeah, I do believe he really does want that fight. Ryan may have a different opinion, but that's what
From the standpoint of big event,
yep,
gigantic money, like that's definitely the fight. And so from that perspective, I see it. I just wonder, just from a stylistic standpoint, like if anybody is 100% wrong for Connor, it's probably Khabib, right, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, that's a bad matchup for him. But as Connor likes to say, that first time they fought, he was not the same that he is right now. The first Connor and Khabib fight, Connor was like your drunken guy you take out of a bar and tell him to sober up for a week because he's got a fight in a week. You know, that was a bad time for him, and he openly talks mm-hmm. about it. But I also see Connor as somebody who's consumed by avenging a loss, because when he lost to Nate Diaz, what was his only mindset was righting that wrong, which is kind of like a surprise when it comes to the fight with Poirier. Kind of makes it a surprise, because as much as Connor is consumed by avenging his losses, you know, this fight coming together with Connor already beating Poirier didn't scream like a fight that Connor would do. Of course, the circumstances of them two going outside of the UFC to try to do a charity boxing and kind of almost force the hand of the UFC to fight this, to make this fight. So I think there's a little bit more to it. And, you know, Connor respects Dustin. He's donating, you know, $500,000 to Poirier's Good Fight Foundation after the fight. So I think there's a lot of, you know, a little bit of stuff like that that kind of brought this fight together. But I mean, he's consumed by the Khabib fight. Even in interviews this week, he's calling himself the champion because Khabib ran out of the cage and never got the title wrapped around his waist. So therefore he says Khabib isn't even the champion. So I mean, you know, it's very clear he wants that fight. I don't see any scenario where it ever happens again. But I mean, I think if it happens again, I don't know that the result's the same, but I think the fight would go differently.
All right. We're going to come back to Nurmagomedov in a second here. I want to ask you guys about one more fight on this card. Ryan, you've been writing about Michael Chandler for us for a little while, you know, even before he signed the dotted line. He's got Dan Hooker a few years ago. I think Chandler coming into the UFC is kind of a big deal because he is at his apex. And now I think a lot of people would say he's probably not at his peak level anymore, but he's still a really good name. He's still a really good fighter. What do you see happening with the fight with Dan Hooker?
I think Chandler's going to win this fight, and I think it's a must win for him because he is 34. This is probably past the time to come to the UFC. He probably should have come years ago, but somehow it kind of feels like it's also the right time, especially with the murkiness that is the lightweight title picture. But this is a must win for him because he's getting paid a lot of money. And let me emphasize the word a lot of money, you know, more than pretty much every other lightweight on the roster. And, you know, he's got that cloud coming in as, you know, a quote unquote Bellator fighter who a lot of UFC fans like to dismiss. So if he loses this fight, that's going to be a bad mark for him because you're giving these hardcore UFC fans that don't watch anything but the UFC ammunition be like, oh, look, those Bellator fighters, they really aren't that good anyway. And all those UFC guys who are going to Bellator, it's because they can't handle the UFC anymore. So this is, you know, a must win for him. And it's probably, when you look at the Bellator organization, they probably should be hoping that Michael Chandler wins this fight because otherwise it may make them look bad as well. So, but I do think Chandler's going to win this fight. I think this is I was pushing for the Paul Felder fight for Chandler's debut. I thought it would have been better for him over the Dan Hooker fight. But of course, Felder took the fight against Dos Anjos a couple months ago, so that threw it out the window. But I mean, Hooker's one of those guys. He's not a top five guy, but he's a top 10 guy. And if you can't, if you want to be a UFC champion in the lightweight division, he's a guy you're going to have to beat.
All right, Paul, your thoughts on this one?
Well, I think for people that maybe aren't familiar with Michael Chandler, and I think, you know, anybody listening to this probably is, there's comparables there to a few guys that have come into UFC from Bellator or World Series of Fighting. And I'm looking at Eddie Alvarez, who has fought Chandler twice, Ben Askren, Justin Gaethje, you know, like those type of fighters. And these are guys that came in and were basically thrown right into the deep end. No easy fights. And, you know, Ryan and I had it out in our Facebook group about how we would have handled the Chandler debut. And Ryan's idea was pretty much what they're doing. And mine was, you know, give him a quote unquote easy fight or two to kind of get people to know him. But that's not what happened. So they obviously are banking on him getting that win over Dan Hooker. And right now is the perfect time for that because Dan Hooker is coming off of a really big year. You mentioned the fight with Poirier. He also had a fight in the early part of the year against Paul Felder that would have been fight of the night fight of the year a lot of years. That was probably the third best fight of the year. So I do think that, you know, this is not a gimme. Like, honestly, Chandler is the underdog right now. I do expect that those odds to change. We talked about this a bit on our show. I think right now it's almost a pick 'em, but Dan Hooker's a slight favorite. I expect that as the bets come in later on in the week and more of the knowledgeable fans start placing their bets, I expect that the odds are going to swing in the favor of Michael Chandler by Saturday. So if you are thinking about placing bets, I would go with Chandler right now because it's the best odds you're probably going to get on him.
Ryan, on this show, main card, prelim card, early prelim card, is there like a sneaky underdog fight that you're like super fired up for that, you know, your normal UFC casual fan probably has no idea is going to be something to look forward to?
The two that I'm looking at are both lightweight fights. One of them is on the main card, which features Otman Azatar, who is 13-0 with 10 knockouts. He's a super prospect. Both of his UFC fights have been first round knockouts. He's a guy who I'm really high on as becoming a contender in the lightweight division. So having him on the main card of a Conor fight is a good showcase for him. And then the featured prelim between Armin Sarukian and Nazareth Haqparast, when I was breaking down the fight, I mean, those guys are two excellent prospects. Hackparas likes to keep the fight standing. Sarukian's a takedown guy. It's just good styles clash. Both of them are exciting. Exciting. So those are two fights that I'm really looking forward to on the show.
Paul, if you're looking at this card from a betting standpoint, is there one bet, and I haven't even looked at the odds, you would know better than me, where you're like, this is clearly an easy bet for you, and then on the flip side, actually not even the flip side, but is there a bet where you're like, I'm kind of wondering about these odds, this, you know, I'm leaning this way and the odds don't seem to go your way, but the odds seem a little bit off to you, and that might be an easy win? Like, are there one of each, one easy fight that you think is very clearly you're going to bet, and then another one that's more of like a sneaky underdog because you know a lot about this stuff, people may be sleeping on this person kind of bet?
Well, the first one, I'm looking at the Nick Lentz and Movsar Evloev fight on the early prelims. Evloev's an undefeated featherweight, but he hasn't really beat anybody big, and he hasn't even finished anyone. He's in UFC, he's had three decision wins, and Nick Lentz is a grinder, and if Nick Lentz can establish his game plan, I think I can easily see Nick Lentz getting a win here. And Nick Lentz is a huge underdog, so he's plus 350. Now if the odds were straight up, I would definitely go with Evloev, but I think that's a one you probably want to take a flyer on. When you talk about a sneaky underdog, I'm just looking at the odds right now. The only one that I would say is maybe the Hakeem Dawodu against Shane Burgos. Now, Shane Burgos is a tough fighter. Yeah. But did
they take that fight off?
Yeah, that fight.
Oh, is that off?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go.
Which is a bummer,
yeah,
because I love Dawodu.
Yeah, that was a great fight.
So the only other one I'm looking at is the Juliana Pena and Sarah McMahon, which is I see it as a pick'em. So if I was gonna put money on an underdog, I would probably just put it on Juliana Pena, just because she's the underdog, and really you're getting positive value there. But I mean, I think, like, I'm looking at the odds, and like, other than that Conor fight that I talked about earlier, which I think the odds are too low for Conor, I would say that, you know, everything else is pretty much right, other than the one I mentioned earlier too, the Michael Chandler. Like, if these odds stay the way they are and you can get more than your money back for, you know, like, if you're getting positive odds for Chandler, take it, because I do think that Chandler should be the favorite in this fight. He's definitely anything but a guarantee to win, but he should be the favorite.
All right, Ryan, same question for you.
As far as an overwhelming favorite who will probably make you money, I'm looking at Khalil Roundtree. He has to be salivating at the fact that he's fighting Marcin Prachnio. Prachnio has three UFC fights, all three losses in the first round by knockout. He's been dropped in every fight. Even Sam Alvey dropped him twice, and Sam Alvey rarely ever drops anybody. And Roundtree is a guy who trains in Thailand, Muay Thai guy, a striker through and through, has never even attempted a takedown in his UFC career. So you know this is going to stay on the feet. And Roundtree is just, I mean, he's got to be chomping at the bits that they gave him a fight that is designed to give him an impressive win. As far as underdogs, I think in the fight that I mentioned with Sarukian Hackparas, Sarukian's the slight underdog, and I kind of like his chances in that fight, especially if he can get Hackparas down to the ground. So I think that one, as far as an underdog, probably has some sneaky value right there.
All right, so I wanted to talk a little bit about the column that Ryan writes. And actually, you know, there's you write a couple of different columns. You write the guide to all of every show that the UFC puts on. You're writing a guide to, like, just kind of like nice nuggets and tidbits, so that if you're a viewer and you don't know what's going on in some of these fights, Ryan breaks it down very nicely for you. But you also write the Monday column, which is my favorite one, around, you know, what happened on the weekend, and then things that you're hearing, little tidbits, nuggets of things that, you know, maybe we haven't seen yet. And one thing I wanted to pull out of there from your Monday column was the possibility of a Nate Diaz fight. And I hadn't heard this, and I'm going to maybe make you blush here, but I got an email from our friend John Moxley, and he was like, oh yeah, you know, the guy that writes for you, he wrote about Nate Diaz. I haven't heard about that. Like, what's going on with that fight? So he's clearly reading your column. But talk about the nugget with Nate Diaz that you wrote on Monday.
Yeah, Dana talked about when he first got to Abu Dhabi, he did an interview for the UFC website, and then he talked about how he's working on a fight for Nate Diaz, and kind of left, whenever he was being pressed for an opponent, he kind of left it as like a mystery opponent. So, I mean, it kind of, like, you could try to figure out, most people were thinking it was going to be Tony Ferguson because everybody wants to see Nate Diaz against Tony Ferguson. But when I kind of asked around a little bit, it's, you know, it became clear it wasn't Ferguson, and that it was going to be a fight between try to get Nate back on track, but also to try to get the person he's fighting back on track, and that it was going to be at lightweight. So when I kind of put two and two together, you know, it's not Ferguson, but it's somebody who they're trying to get back on track. And I was just like thinking, and I was just like, is it Gaethje? And then there kind of wasn't a little bit of a response. And then Dana did another interview where somebody brought up the same thing about it being Justin Gaethje. And he kind of gave a little bit of, you know, kind of one of those unconfirmed confirmed kind of things. So that seems to be the fight that they're working on right there.
Very interesting. All right, let's get back to Khabib. Paul, what do you think happens? Actually, I'm actually interested on what you thought happened on over the weekend, where they had this big announcement, and the announcement actually came out to, there's not really an announcement. There's like nothing there. And obviously it had something to do with what Nurmagomedov was going to do next. And then it was like, you know, maybe he might be interested. Like, that was the answer. Well, so what do you think happened there? And also, what are your thoughts on him coming back? And then we'll get to Ryan's thoughts on that after.
So I think what happened is that he told him, no, I don't want to come back. And Dana probably said, you know, please, you know, like, not like that, but you know what I mean? And he was just like,
maybe
no.
Like that.
The fight that, like, here's what I think. The fight that Dana wants to make is Conor. And that is a fight that Khabib has absolutely no interest in. So, number one, that's what he wants. The fight that Khabib wants is George St. Pierre. And UFC, for whatever reason, doesn't want to make that fight. So, Dana was probably throwing out different names and probably maybe saying, like, oh, well, what if Chandler looks good this weekend? What if Dan Hooker looks good? You know, kind of thing. And then maybe even said, you know, what about Oliveira? Now, to me, out of all those names, the one that I would say, if Khabib was going to come back, and I don't think he is, but if he was going to come back, the one guy that I could see him being interested in fighting would be Charles Oliveira, just because it's a different challenge for him. Michael Chandler is basically just Justin Gaethje 2.0. So, and he's already beat him. He's already beat Conor. He's already beat Poirier. Dan Hooker is just not, you know, that's not a fight that anybody wants to see. That's what I think. Like, so maybe that's why Dana threw that name out there, just because it is a different challenge. There is that ground game that Oliveira has that Khabib hasn't really had to deal with. And with all his takedowns, you know, like, that is something in his game plan that he would have to work on. So maybe it's a challenge that Khabib would be interested in. But again, I don't think he is going to come back. So that's why I think Dana threw that name out there, though, maybe just to entice him. I just don't think it's going to work.
And Ryan, you've been pretty consistent in your writing saying that you think Khabib is retired, and that you do think that he is going to stay retired. He's going to find other things to do. So after what you heard over the weekend, do you still think the same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Habib is not a guy who's motivated by money. So, I mean, he's set for life. His children are set for life. His children's children are set for life. So when it comes down to Dana throwing out money, I think Dana could throw out $100 million at him and Habib will say no. With, you know, so I don't, when it comes to the money thing, that's not a motivation. Habib, if he's going to come back, it's for legacy. And he doesn't see, you know, a legacy of fighting McGregor a second time. And the only legacy fight he sees is George St. Pierre. And I think Habib told him, like, no, he's not coming back. And Dana's like that scorned ex that doesn't want to let go. But I also think that Dana trying to pressure him is also, you know, due to the fact that, you know, they trying to have these big television deals in Russia that are really dependent on Habib. So then those go away. And then, you know, and all this money that the company could make from him fighting goes away. So that's kind of a hit to the company in one sense, but, and also I don't think that Dana wanted to have a true decision come out this week, because I don't think he wanted any last minute pressure to make the fight between Poirier and McGregor a title fight if Habib said he was walking away, and there would be a lot of pressure to do that. So they're meeting again in Las Vegas come next week or within the next couple of weeks, and I think that's when the ultimate picture is going to become clear. And I've been adamant that Habib's done, because I can just kind of, I'm pretty with him. It's a little bit, it's way different than like Henry Cejudo. We all know Henry Cejudo is going to come back. You know, it's just a matter of not if, but when. But when Habib, who is very much follows his word and is a man of his word, when he says he's done, you believe it. And the only fight he wants is George St. Pierre. He even kind of hinted, he's in Abu Dhabi right now. Habib is. And from everything it looks like, he looks like a guy who's not planning on making 155 pounds within the next year. So, and, you know, he's enjoying life, and he's been kind of shy away from doing interviews with people, but he was the ever famous Schmo was able to get a minute from him, and he and Habib brought up again that the only fight he wants is with GSP. Dana keeps saying that neither one of them want to fight each other, which we all know is not true. And I don't know why he just is so adamant about not making that fight, especially when he said 8 months ago he would make that fight. I don't understand, you know. So sometimes the more I try to figure out Dana, the more confused I get about Dana. Sometimes, you know, sometimes his intentions are completely obvious, and sometimes it's just like, what are you doing? Like, but, you know, Habib's done, in my opinion.
I think for Dana, he looks at it as like sort of a one-time win situation, but ultimately he doesn't get to pay off the fight, because Habib wins, he goes back into retirement, GSP wins, he goes back into retirement, and it's like, okay, we can't build off of this thing at all. Well, you know, you just did, you know, 1.75 million buys on the show, so you get something out of it. But I do think he kind of thinks, you know, that he's not going to get whatever the next thing, you know, building to the next thing, he's not going to get anything out of it.
But at the same time, that, like, that can literally happen in any fight. You try to, you know.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, you try to make Conor and Habib again, and, you know, if that happens again, both those guys could be done after that fight. So you just kind of never know. So they messed
up. He probably also thinks he could talk Conor out of or into anything, and he doesn't feel the same way about the other two guys.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Conor's always gonna be trying to chase that paycheck until he can't anymore. That's why I think the whole boxing next is something he shouldn't pursue. I think he should stick with MMA, because he's at his peak, And these boxing fights can wait five more years when he's 37. I know, you know, fighting Manny Pacquiao when he's 47 is a little bit different than it would be when he's 42. But, I mean, you know, Pacquiao, I'm sure, would still take that fight 5 years from now. I mean, so it's just, you know, when it comes to Habib, I just want to say, Dana, let him go.
All right, so before we get out of here, I want you guys to talk a little bit about your show that you do for the network. So, you know, people listening to this is in our Blue Wire feed. Ryan and Paul do one of these shows that Monday through Friday on the network. If you're on the second tier, there's a new show every week. Monday, it's myself and John talking about Raw 97. And then you guys come in on Tuesday with your MMA show talking about what happened over the weekend, what's coming up, all the news. Wednesday, we have High Tension, which is our Japanese wrestling podcast. Then Thursday is Robert and Carlos talking boxing. And then Friday is our we wrap it up with Two Jabronis. So talk about your show, Paul. What will people hear if they subscribe to our Patreon? MMA fans, maybe even fringe MMA fans who kind of join for the wrestling, but like the idea that, you know, they can kind of tune in to an MMA show if they want.
Well, what I'll say is Ryan and I are both like really, you know, we're, you know, we report on this stuff, but we're huge fans. And we're also both come from being pro wrestling fans. So if you are a pro wrestling, you know, if you signed up for the pro wrestling, you're probably going to have that perspective when, you know, we'll reference, you know, wrestling things quite a bit, just kind of, you know, the way things play out and business and angles and stuff like that. Ryan writes for the Wrestling Observer newsletter as well. So, you know, there is that relationship there. And the way, you know, the businesses are similar and how pro wrestlers take from MMA and MMA takes from pro wrestlers. And we even had, you know, our one guest we've had so far is a former WWE superstar and current independent wrestler, Tom Santel, Antonio the Promise Thomas. So, you know, I think you're going to get that. You're also going to get the, you know, the betting perspective, which I think, like, if you bet on MMA, like, you should be listening to the picks we do. We've got a year on the website of profitable picks. Like, these aren't just, you know, people saying, oh yeah, you know, we have winners, so pay us and then we'll tell you the winners. Like, no, like, these are on the site that, you know, you can get for free. But then on the web, on our show, we actually do a best bet. So out of all the picks we do, like, this, these are the ones we're most confident of. So that's exclusive to the show, and you're not going to get that in the column. Like, we'll reference it after the fact that this is how our best bets did, but if you want the best bet, you got to listen to the show.
And Ryan, just to wrap it up, you know, like Paul said, you're writing for Wrestling Observer, you're writing for Fight Game Media, you're doing this podcast, you're pretty busy, dude. Like, how are you able to stay on top of everything when it comes to just, you know, keeping up with all this stuff?
Well, I mean, I've been keeping, when it comes to MMA, I've been watching this since UFC 1, and I like to tell everybody, ever since about 2001, I have seen every single second of every single UFC fight as it happens, whether it's on television or whether I'm live in person. I don't miss anything. And, you know, when it comes to, like, keeping up with everything and how I'm able to balance all of, you know, everything I do as far as, like, media work, I think writing in the Wrestling Observer newsletter, that a little bit of Dave Meltzer started to rub off on me as far as just keeping myself busy and, you know, with writing. But I mean, but I've been to a million shows. I am a big time credentialed media member. You know, I'm just waiting to be injected with that vaccine so I can basically move back into the Aria for the foreseeable future and be back at all these UFC events in Las Vegas. So when you listen to us, you're going to get, you know, a lot of inside stuff that I have that I get from, you know, just being around the sport forever and knowing what's going on. And then, you know, I can drop history at the drop of a bucket off the top of my head. So, you know, when you listen to us, you're going to come out getting some knowledge out of listening to us.
You also don't have six kids. So that's how you have time for all this stuff.
Yes,
too.
Yes, I am.
I got six kids.
Yeah, I mean,
six kids, man.
Yeah, and I'm.
I got my daughter sitting behind me when we record.
And I'm a single man with a dog who likes fighting, whiskey, and poker. So I mean,
yeah. Nice
in that order.
Nice.
Put them all together. Put them all together, and it's a hell of a night for me.
There you go.
All right, quickly give your Twitter handles in case people want to follow your live fight tweets. That
just
happen.
Watch UFC. You'll see Ryan's Twitter on there like 10 times a show.
Absolutely. So you Paul Ace Fontaine and Ryan, you're R Frederick, but then there's some numbers there.
It's Ryan J. Frederick.
Oh, Ryan J. Frederick. Okay.
This shows how much Garrett watches UFC.
No. I almost gave away his email address is what I almost did. All right, guys. Thanks. This was a lot of fun. We got one more segment left on our mega UFC preview, and we'll get
Who's
there.
Who's that going to be? Second.
All right. Now to here to hit cleanup for us. Actually, he's hitting third, but still, he's hitting three. He's hitting third out of three guests here. AEW's Jon Moxley. We're gonna talk some Conor. We're gonna talk Dustin. I feel like we've been talking about this fight for the last few shows. Anyways, it's finally here. In a few days, you can turn on ESPN Plus. You're gonna see Conor and Dustin get in the cage. How excited are you for this one?
Oh, like level 10. This is like one of those fights that like. I just can't wait to see how it fucking starts to play out, because I was thinking about this. If you think about it as if this isn't a rematch, because you kind of have to think about it like this is too new. Like I said last time, this is a different Dustin Poirier than 6 years ago.
Yeah, six.
Not just because he's older, more experienced, at a different place in life, mentally and emotionally. Also, this is a lightweight. I was watching some of the highlights and the weigh-ins and stuff from their first fight. They both look just emaciated featherweight, but Dustin more so. He looks like so drained as featherweight. Like this is clearly the weight class he's supposed to be at. And you know, he got knocked out with a pretty shot across the back of the head. You know, his chin is going to be much more durable at 55 and has been. You know, at some point we wonder if all these wars he's been in are going to catch up to him. You know, we don't know yet. You know, hopefully it's not this Saturday that it finally catches up. But in general, you know, you're at a higher weight, you know, with any natural weight class at 55, his chin is going to be a lot more durable than it was at 45. And like I said, he's just in a better place. Been kind of listening to where he's at, and it's a different. Different place when you're young and you're cutting a ton of weight all the time and you're real emotional about everything and this is the only thing in the world that matters, and you're you know, Dustin's a grinder and he's a guy who's good at suffering and everything. That's, you know, why he thinks he'll win, you know, if this grinds out into a dogfight, you know. And when you're just, you know, you really lean into just like the grind of it, the cutting the weight, the doing diet, the everything, and it's real personal and this is the only thing in your life and it's the most important thing in your life. It's not as healthy of an emotional state to be in, to go out and just perform at your best and have fun. And now he's not so much worried about not having to cut weight, and he can just go out there and perform and get better and improve and everything. That's what's happened over the last several years with him at lightweight. You know, he's always got a daughter and so forth, and it's a different place. I wonder though, if he just woke up, cause I'm thinking like, everybody's picking Conor. Mm-hmm. Like everybody, I don't know if it's because of we saw it once before, it's just Conor mania, or if, you know, Conor looks like he's saying and doing all the right things and it's going to be, you know, peak Conor. For whatever reason, it seems like I can't find anybody to give me an analysis and a pick and say, I believe Dustin is going to win and here's why. Everybody seems to think Conor's going to win. So I wonder if Dustin's like, man, I just woke up in the same nightmare I was in 6 years ago, where like everybody's talking about Conor. They're already talking about Conor's going to get the next title shot. Who's going to fight Conor next and yada, yada. And it's just like a given that Conor's going to win. I wonder if he's like, waking up in that same nightmare, and that will affect him at all. But I kind of don't think it will. The way he's kind of been in interviews and so forth, I think he's just going to go out there and do what he does. And I'm real interested to see how it plays out, because you can't just sit in the pocket like Dustin does and just trade bombs back and forth with Connor. I don't think it'll be – I think he's going to be wary and not cautious, but, you know, conservative in the first couple rounds when Connor's the most dangerous, and then look to turn up the tempo in the later rounds. But, you know, it could be just – when you look back at those – the first fight with Dustin and just that whole string of wins Connor had, he just looked like so just on a different level than his opponents. And I don't know how much of that, depending on how much of that was, you know, a mental game and whatever it is, but it's like he was completely untouchable in so many fights, you know. And are we going to see that same thing? Well, it's not the same Dustin, but man, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. I just want to see how it, this first round especially is going to be real interesting. I think as it gets later, you know, the odds start swinging more in Poirier's favor the longer the fight goes. But, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked or surprised, you know, if Connor's, you know, in a good place and in top form and, you know, where he's at when he's at his best. I wouldn't be surprised to see a first round knockout and like a Connor vintage performance, but I don't know, man. I mean, it's a different Dustin Poirier, so it's basically it's like a fight we're seeing for the very first time, even though it is a rematch. And I try to think of it. Who would I pick if they had never fought before, and this is the first time you're ever seeing this fight? Because it basically is, and I kind of lean toward Connor because, like I say, he's not just going to be able to stand there and trade, you know, like he does sometimes. And I don't know. I kind of lean toward Connor, even though I'm kind of like, from an emotional investment standpoint, I'm really rooting for Dustin because he's just such a good guy. Mm-hmm. So he's the ultimate baby face. It's like, you know, it's a classic story. You have the very Apollo Creed like Connor, you know, with the lavish lifestyle and all the flash and the sizzle and the big name and everything. And then Poirier who's already lost once and has come back now, risen from the ashes of that defeat to become a contender, and from the backwoods of Lafayette, Louisiana, and he's this great guy and this great baby face, and now we're meeting again, and it's like, what a great story, you know, if Dustin were to win. It's a great story to see play out, you know. So it's hard not to root for Dustin.
Yeah.
But it's hard to be like, okay, I'm 100% behind Dustin, but if I gotta put my money, where am I putting it? Because all that stuff aside, just based on the matchup, I really kind of lean toward Connor.
Yep.
So, but I mean, because of kind of the Connor mania, I think, like, and everybody seems to be picking Connor, I think as we get closer and closer to Saturday, the odds are going to be, I think, maybe not astronomical, but they're going to be pretty seriously in Connor's favor. So if you're a betting man and you like to take a, wager out here and there, like, Dustin might be quite the live dog on Saturday, because he might – I feel like he's already counted out. I don't know what – last time I looked, it was like 250 or something. But if you're looking to throw some money on an underdog, Dustin might be your guy, because people are acting like he can't win. Like, he for sure can win. So, yeah, that might be a fun little wager to – If you're into it.
I wonder if the way to bet this fight is to bet Connor first round knockout, and then also put a little bit of money on Dustin winning a decision, because you kind of cover your rear end a little bit. I think the reason why I think all the Connor stuff is so positive on him winning, I think it's two things. A, it's exactly what you said. he's the big star. Everyone wants him to win. The UFC is so much more fun when he's involved. And so thus, if he wins, then, you know, hopefully they'll do something again with him building off of this win. But secondly, it's just future business, right? Like, if Dustin wins this fight, then you don't get the possibility of Conor and, you know, Khabib coming back, even though, you know, I think even that, I don't think Khabib's going to come back for a Conor fight. But then, you know, these other fights, the whether it's Nate Diaz or whether it's, you know, whomever, those fights are much bigger with Conor in them than with a Dustin Poirier in them. So I think it's both of those things. People want to see Conor win, but people are also looking forward to what's next, and they don't envision Dustin being a part of what's next.
Yeah. I mean, from a business perspective, or if you're just a Conor fan who doesn't follow necessarily everybody else closely, you know, Dana for sure wants Conor to win. You hear him talking about what Dustin's going to do if Dustin wins? No, but he's already been like, yeah, you know, if Conor wins, you know, when Conor wins, like, he wants Conor to be for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dana does. You know, I guarantee it. And your boy said he had it on good authority that they were looking at Justin Gaethje, Nate Diaz.
Yep.
Which I hadn't even thought of. For sure, that's a hell of a fight. Like, cool, but I hadn't really thought of it. But why does that make sense? Oh, okay, well, Gaethje just fought Khabib. Poirier just fought Khabib. So that's your four-man tournament, is how Dana's looking at it. If Nate beats Gaethje, Conor is a given to beat Poirier in his mind. Then you're looking at Nate-Conor trilogy for a belt. Even though their other fights are at 170, this would be 155. Would think that's like Dana's thinking of, like, okay, let's make it to where, like, if Nate were to beat Gaethje, then he'd, well, hell, at 55, then hell yeah, he's in the conversation, you know, to, that makes total sense. So that would feel like a true new lightweight champion match if they both won those matches, if that match took place. But, like, to me, because I'm, like, such a big fight fan, I don't give a shit about star power and tickets, sure, and whatever. I'm gonna watch the best fights. Conor's not a bigger star to me than Justin Gaethje or Dustin Poirier. You know, even though I know he is to everybody else, Dustin Poirier is every bit to me as big of a star in my mind as Conor is. You know, like, and I would be just as happy to see Poirier versus Gaethje for a title, as they both won those fights, if that other fight even happened. So, but yeah, you're right. From a business perspective, everybody wants to bet on Conor. Conor wins, Conor mania, yada, yada. Conor, I don't know. Dana was all like, oh, I got a big announcement. And then was like, yeah, Khabib said if something spectacular happens, like, what the fuck? He didn't fucking say that. Like, I was very suspect of that. I was like, I feel like this was not an announcement. This was, what was the announcement? Did Khabib say that? And then Khabib said something about, like, yeah, that wasn't what I said at all. He's like, I got a bunch of plans. I got businesses. Khabib pretty much shit on everything Dana said. So, like, and I don't think GSP Khabib's happening, man. I think GSP only came back the one time because he thought he could beat Bisping, and that's it. While Bisping had that belt, just so he could come in, do his thing, and then get out real quick. I mean, he wasn't in there signing up to Phil's fucking Yoel Romero or anything, you know? So he ain't come back to – that ain't happening. I mean, if it did, great, but, you know, until – that ain't happening. I mean, both these motherfuckers are retired. I'm not worrying about that. But, like, I don't see – it. Like, there's the biggest difference between Conor and Dustin. As they both got beat by Khabib in basically identical fights. Conor did a little good. I mean, identical, like, everyone had a tiny marginal amount of success. Gaethje hit a couple leg kicks on him. Conor won a round in some people's eyes. I don't know, whatever. But basically, Conor, Gaethje, Poirier's fights with Khabib all basically looked the same. And so, Poirier just goes, shit, emotional promo. He's like, he fucking cried. Was like, man, shit. Well, I'll be back. I'll dust myself off. I'll come back for the title. And that's exactly what he's done. He came back, beat Dan Hooker in a hellacious fight of the year kind of fight. And now he's poised to, now he's fighting Connor. You know, he like just dusted himself off, got right back on the horse. Mm-hmm. Connor lost to fucking Khabib. He got dropped on the feet, manhandled, tapped out, like, and somehow, and I remember he put out this big long post or whatever of like analyzing the fight, like blow by blow, and somehow making it seem like he was the superior fighter and Khabib's cowardly tactics won him the fight. Like he was trying to make it seem like Khabib was playing some like hack-a-shack defense or something. And it was like some bullshit way out or something. And I'm like, dude, you got fucking dropped in a feed, taken down, fucking mugged, face locked. You know, like you tapped the fuck out. Like, dude, just admit that you lost. Like, it's not that big a fucking deal. Like, you know, like shit, you know, but like, I don't know if it's his mindset or just how, but Dustin was just like, shit, I lost. I gave him my all. I picked myself up, dust myself off, get back on a horse. And here we are. Connor was like in denial. Was like, you know, and now he's saying like, Khabib is ducking me. He's a coward. He knows I'll beat him. This is, and I'm like, based on what information does Khabib think you're going to be like, what are you fucking talking about? He mauled you and you tapped it. Like he beat you just like he beat everybody else. Like, do you think Khabib's sitting there in Dagestan? I would say like in his palace, but he's probably, you know, just chilling on a mat on a floor, drinking some tea, you know, hanging out with his buds, probably choking each other out, you know, doing whatever they're doing, hanging out. Lives a very low key lifestyle, you know, but you know, so he's not going around, you know, he's not driving around, you know, Russia in like, you know, Maseratis and stuff, you know, but like, I don't know what I'm talking about, but, yeah, Khabib's just sitting there like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? You know, if he's even paying attention, he's too busy, you know, not giving a shit about you. His mother told him he can't fight again. You think he gives a shit about what you, you know, and your, what reality you've created? But the thing is, when Connor talks, he sells people on it and people buy it. So if they ever did do Khabib Connor again, by the time we get there, the whole public will believe that Khabib has been ducking Connor and shit. And it's like, dude, that's not the real. So that's just the difference in like approaches and mindsets of Justin and Connor. There's like two totally different types of people, you know?
It sounds like you're thinking about putting money on Dustin though.
I mean, I don't know. It's harder to see. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, and it's also hard to see, like, imagine what kind of Connor we're going to get, you know? I don't know. I mean, I would definitely put money on Dustin, you know, just for fun. But I mean, if I had to, like, if it was like, okay, you got to bet your house, who are you putting your money on? You know, because everything else aside, just based on style matchup, I want to take Connor, mm-hmm. You know? But I think emotionally, I think I'm rooting for Dustin. To pull off the great story, you know, even though Dana will be like, oh shit.
Yeah. I almost feel like Connor, he needs to win this fight, because he needs to stay the talk of the UFC. But I'm actually more worried that if he does this fight with Manny Pacquiao, this boxing fight, he's going to get knocked out in like the third round, and then his boxing thing is going to be done, and all he's got left is the UFC. Because if he keeps the boxing and the UFC kind of going at the same time, just from a leverage standpoint, you know, he'll always kind of be in demand. But if he loses the boxing thing by kind of biting off a little bit more than he could chew with Pacquiao, then he might only have the UFC thing. So I think this is a must-win fight for him. Obviously, he'll still have other fights down the road if he wants them, but I think that he needs to win this fight, because of the way that he promotes himself and the way that he leverages himself as a businessman, I don't think he can take any shots to the armor right now for all of the things that he supposedly wants to do. So I do think Connor is going to be, you know, I don't know what 100% or an A-plus version of Connor is these days. You know, all the stuff that that dude does in his life. But I do think he's going to come to this fight at the tippiest top shape that a Conor McGregor can be at today. And I do think he's going to really, really have a good fight. So, you know, if Dustin also is the best version of Dustin, I think that we have a really competitive fight. But I still think Conor is a little bit better of a fighter. He's got more ways to kind of finish. But I'm pretty jazzed. I think there's a lot of sympathy for guys like Dustin because of what you kind of said, in that, you know, he doesn't go that other route that Connor does in the promotion. He's very respectful. You kind of root for him because you know that he's like a fighter's fighter. Like, you imagine that all those dudes back there respect him. You know, he doesn't show anybody up. He's very respectful, and he's also really good. So I think like you, a lot of people are very interested in him, you know, in him upsetting Connor. I don't know. If I had to bet, I think I would bet Connor for a first or second round finish. But then again, like I said, you can always bet the other side. And if that doesn't happen, you know, Dustin, can Connor beat Dustin by decision? I'm not sure.
Yeah, he doesn't really win a lot of decisions. When's the last time he won a decision? He won the decision against Nate the second time.
Yeah.
Which, the first time I watched it, I was like, they're going to score some for Connor. I kind of was like leaning toward Connor. But when I kind of rewatched it like a year later and just unbiasedly watched it, I thought Nate won.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like, it could have been a draw. I mean, it was right on the fucking, you know. But like that was a must win for him. And I think this kind of is a must win for him because, you know, his whole thing is built on like, none of these guys are on my level, and I'll go fucking box Pacquiao and do this and that, and whatever. And, you know, Khabib is a pussy and he's afraid of me. He didn't really beat, like, everything is so like the stuff he says. If he just goes out there and just gets beat by Poirier, then all of a sudden his talk isn't as, at least Khabib, you know, he beat everybody else in the same way, so he could at least say like, oh, okay, well, Khabib didn't really beat me, he took me down, or I don't know, like, he, whatever way he justified it or whatever. But like, if he just goes out there and gets knocked out by Poirier, I mean, all that talk and all that like business leverage and trying to fight Pacquiao and whatever that even is, I don't, you know, I don't know anything about that. I don't know why you would do that. I want to see him focused on being in the UFC because he's a great fighter.
Yep.
And I like to watch him fight. So I wish he would just focus on this. I don't want to see him fucking box, you know, like, that's just punching. UFC's all kind of eating kick and shit, you know, like, it's more shit to watch. Like, you know, I'd rather see you do this, you know, like, yeah, it is kind of a must win for him. So, I mean, this is like a, yeah, it'd be interesting to see. It'd be interesting to see if Dustin wins, then like what happens to him,
mm-hmm.
You know, cause then what if Dustin knocked him out in the first round? Just theoretically. Then what?
I think people go nuts. You know,
then it's like all of this, like, so much potential business that, you know, nobody wants that to happen except Dustin and mm-hmm. people rooting for Dustin.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in Lafayette wants that to happen, but like Dana, the pay-per-view companies, ESPN, nobody else wants that to happen. You know, Manny Pacquiao could probably make more money just by tweeting about Conor McGregor, leveraging some boxing contract or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's funny, like, how much, Dustin could really upset the apple cart.
Yeah.
Just by throwing a fucking left hook, you know?
By the way, did you watch Max on Saturday?
Oh, he's incredible. Like, that volume punching, like, Diaz style to like the 10th degree. Like, I don't even, like they said, he threw more punches in the fourth round than Dominic Cruz has thrown in a fight like ever in his entire career. Like, that's just, it was insane. And that Calvin Kattar, man, he's a tough dude.
I was feeling for him. I was calling for the corner to throw the towel in, you know, in that fourth round. I was like, come on, like, you gotta save this dude, because he's not quitting.
Yeah, once it's clear that he's not going to win, and you want to save him. I mean, what does it really mean? Does he feel really that much better about his performance if he made it to the final bell? You know, it's almost worse. I don't know. Looking back, it's like, if you were Kattar, like, would you really be that upset if they just threw in the towel in between the third and fourth round? I don't know.
From a health perspective, and you want this kid to have, and he's not even a kid anymore, he's in his 30s, but you want this guy to have an extended career, like, you know, you got to give him a shot at not taking so much damage. Look, if this was a fight that wasn't, like you just said, the most strikes landed in the history of the UFC, then it's a different story. Like, okay, maybe there's an outside chance that he can land a punch, but what we saw was utter and total domination, to the point of that it was setting records for offense. And this guy is so tough that he's taking everything. And that kind of stuff has got to add up. And that's why I would have thrown in the towel. I wouldn't have thrown in the towel just because he was losing.
You're not just getting beated lopsided in a lopsided way. Like, you're taking in double the amount of punches any fighter's ever taken in one fight. Like,
absolutely.
That's like doing two fights in one. That's horrible. But the amazing thing is all those punches and strikes landed, and nothing knocked him out. Mm-mm. Either he's got a granite skull, or I don't know how nothing knocked him out. Like, one of those had to hit him. And I think with those elbows, Max was trying to finish him. You know, he's happy to just like land and just keep piecing him up and whatever and keep doing it. He's probably enjoying himself out there. But when he's throwing those elbows, I think he was trying to like end the fight with those. Those are nasty.
Yeah, those are vicious. All right, two more things before I let you go here. You've been on the Michael Chandler train here. He's got the fight, Dan Hooker semi-main event. How do you see this one going?
I'm really leaning toward Hooker.
Interesting.
Yeah, like, I mean, one of those things where like you just don't know where Chandler fits in until you see him. Like, of, you know, the top guys in the division, all different guys have fought different guys. You can kind of compare and contrast how they all match up. But he's never fought anybody in the division. So it's like you just don't know until you see him. And Hooker's, and, you know, trying to think of how would Chandler beat him. Like, for sure, he's got a real powerful overhand right, good boxing, wrestling, but like Hooker's a bad motherfucker, and like, and really slick submission game too. I was there live. He hit like what's his face, something Daya Kisi something, brother with a multicolored fellow with a like a mohawk, like a red mohawk. I don't want to say it's a gentleman named Daya Kisi something, but Hooker hit him with the, like, the fastest guillotine you ever seen in your life. Like, super quick. Lightning quick. I remember, like, I was, like, 10 feet away. It was like, Jesus Christ. Like, the fight just ends. So, Hooker's got a real crazy submission game, even though we're just thinking about his recent fight with Poirier, you know, how dangerous of a striker he is. But he's got a lot of ways to win. And, you know, definitely going to take Hooker, but, you know, if Michael Chandler comes out and nothing against Chandler, but, you know, if he comes out and, you know, dominates and shows what he can do, and then we see kind of where he fits in. I think we're going to have to see him against Hooker to kind of see where he fits in. Mm-hmm. We just don't know. And kind of that curse of the big name free agents that always seem to kind of lose in their first UFC fight, even if they go on to greatness, it seems like that first one's always, you know, Shogun, Crow Cop, Eddie Alvarez, who else? You know, the, it always seems like the first one is rough, you know.
Yeah, like for whatever it's
and he's coming in right at the deep end, man.
Yeah, it's a fight that is at a level of a title fight for where they came from, because just the level of competition is so high in the UFC.
Yeah, we just don't have anything on paper to be like, look what he did to so-and-so who also fought this guy, and we can kind of see how it fixed it. It's like, okay, he's got good boxing, he's got good wrestling. Well, welcome to the fucking UFC. Also, also welcome to the fucking top five of the toughest division, the most stacked division in the number one fighting place in the world. But, you know, so you don't think Hooker's got good everything else too? You know, you don't think he can fucking sprawl? You know, like, you know, but big opportunity for Chandler. You know, he's looking to win this fight and then make a big call out, you know? So
he's got to get in the mix.
I think it's going to, I don't think it's going to go good for him.
All right.
My money's on Hooker in that one.
All right. So we got to make a call. I know you're going to be involved in our Fight Game Media pick'ems that we do for every main UFC show. So when I get the email from you that says who you're taking between Connor and Dustin, what is that gonna say?
Like I said, if I put everything else aside and I just look at the matchup in this scenario, I'll put my pick on Connor. But if I lose that, I would be happy. But this is just
for fun.
Who do you think is going to win?
Yeah, we're doing it for fun. Yeah, this is a
mathematical. How many people did you think was going to win one game? This is not who I want to win for any storyline purpose. So for that, I'm picking Connor. So I'm picking Connor, Hooker, Jessica I, just because she's a Vegas girl for no other reason. And then the other two, I kind of have to look at, but I will get that promptly.
Yeah, no. As long as we have them before the show, then it's all good. So this is going to be fun. And then I think you're going to come back on Saturday night for our UFC recap show, which will be on the Fight Game Media Patreon. So I will send out a link for that if people want to subscribe. And for those who have already subscribed, you'll get to hear John talk some more MMA. But so looking forward. Like, have you looked at the schedule for the next few months? It's legit. The schedule is, we're going to have some really good shows.
The only one I can think, Ortega Volkanovski, which they're talking about Max getting it. I mean, how do you not give him a title shot after that performance? But I'm almost not worried about it. I'm almost like, he almost like surpassed the need to get an immediate title shot with that performance, because he's been the champion before and was one of the greatest champions of that division ever. Maybe the greatest featherweight champion ever. He's almost like one of those wrestling things where it's like, oh, that guy doesn't need the belt. Like, Max is almost like, I almost would rather see him against some other guys. I mean, I want to see him with a third fight against Volkanovski, but I don't even feel like we're in a rush. Like, oh, Max needs to get a title shot. I'm almost like, he's almost on this new level where he's almost his own thing, where I'm not even too worried about, we got to get that third match between them. Especially because Volkanovski won both, even though they're kind of contested, but still, I'm not too worried about, like, Max has to get a title shot. If they put him against Korean Zombie or anybody, I'd be like, cool, that's just a good fight. I just like to see Max fight. I feel like he's almost surpassed, like, needing the belt for any kind of validation or anything. I mean, I don't know if his paychecks are going to be any different, so he might think differently than me. But in my mind, you know, I'm not too worried about it. But Volkanovski Ortega, that's a fucking sick fight.
Usman and LeBron Burns. Usman and Burns, that is in 3 weeks. So we don't have to wait a full month until the next big UFC show after this.
Yeah, that's going to be a fight with just like no trash talking whatsoever. And that's going to be like a very high level, high skill level, good fight with just no circus or fireworks whatsoever. So I'll watch it, you know. But
and then
be interesting to see what happens in the build up to that.
And then in March, Adesanya and your boy Jan.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting. So I can't even imagine to see how that plays out yet. Like looking at that I got to do some studying on that one to even. I don't feel educated enough to even speak on it right now.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, man. Yeah, that's interesting. I think the funny thing is, I think the whole reason that's happening, I think the whole thing of Adesanya moving up, I think it's the end game is to procure a fight with John Jones.
Right.
They're like Twitter beefing or whatever. That's how the kids do it nowadays. You know, cool, whatever. But I think that's clearly the goal of Adesanya, to go up, win the light heavyweight belt, and go like, got your belt, bitch. Why don't you come get it to John Jones? But Jones looks very intent on going to heavyweight, putting the weight on.
Yep.
I think Dana said pretty much he's going to face the winner of the other fight, Stipe Ngannou.
Yep.
Number two, which is going to be super fucking interesting. The first fight they had, I was like, I don't know if you call it a great fight. It's one of my favorite memories of a fight. I don't know if you call it a great fight, like it went back and forth. But like, as far as like entertainment value and a story and characters and a harrowing experience as a fan, my God, that was a great fight. I was like on the edge of my seat, pacing, like sweating the crazy first round when Stipe's dodging these fights or dodging these shots and eating some shots and just trying to survive the first round. He's hitting him with these like high school single leg takedowns and shit. And you're like, yes, take him down, survive. it was like a movie. And then, you know, then he wrestle fucked him for the next four rounds. So maybe nobody would consider it a great fight, but I would consider it a great fight because it was such an amazing performance by Stipe. I remember thinking like the entrance, Stipe's entrance. Cause at this point, Francis hadn't been, Francis was very scary. He's arguably scarier now because mm-hmm. now he's taken that loss and gotten even better and more scary. So the sequel is going to be even scarier. But, you know, Stipe is like a working man's champion, you know, firefighter and so forth, you know. And he's walking in the ring and just completely emotionless, chewing gum, like he's just going to work. And, like, Francis Ngannou's standing in the ring. And, like, I was just thinking, like, man, what's this guy feeling like right now? Like, he's about to get in the ring with this monster who's trying to decapitate him, you know? Like, what's that feeling like, taking that walk to get in the ring with Francis, knowing you're going to have to survive that first round, you know? Or, you know, like, my God, like, when you watch it like that and just kind of put yourself in Stipe's perspective, it's like, what a harrowing experience. And a great – that's why this is such a great sport, you know? And now we get to see it again. But now Francis has come back for revenge. It's like – the sequel, it's like even scarier. Stipe Ngannou 2, even scarier. That's what they're going to call the pay-per-view. I'll be watching that for sure.
All right. So, like I said, you'll be back with us on Saturday night for the Patreon. But thanks for jumping on. I also want to say thanks to Dave Meltzer. Thanks to Ryan and Paul from In the Clinch, which you can also listen to on our Patreon. That's our main MMA show, which is up. Gosh, it's up Tuesday morning for everybody if you want to listen to that. But anyways, thanks also to John. So for all of them, I am Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.